This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Glad to have you along as we wind down 2017. Wow, seems like the year just started, now it's over, and we're preparing for the challenges and opportunities of 2018. So, a lot to be done in the year ahead. But on today's show, we're going to look back as we look forward. In January 2015, Chief Kelvin Cochran was fired by Atlanta Mayor Kasem Reed. Now, this was 2 months after being suspended over comments he made in a self-published Christian book entitled Who Told You That You Were Naked?, which laid out a case for biblical morality as it pertained to our sexuality. Well, we'll talk with Kelvin Cochran and his attorney, Kevin Terrio, with Alliance Defending Freedom in just a moment. Then we'll also talk to our own Travis Weber, director of our Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council, about the implications of this case and other cases that are out there that have an impact upon our religious freedom. And so very important program today. And if you miss anything on your way home, hey, it's all archived at TonyPerkins.com. So be sure and check out that website, TonyPerkins.com. Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Final day for the end of year matching grant challenge. Any financial commitment you make, you partner with us financially, it will be matched today. We have a generous donor who's going to match everything that you give. So give us a call. I got folks standing by, 800-225-4008, or you can do so online at TonyPerkins.com. All right. Last week, a federal court ruled in favor of Chief Kelvin Cochran in his case against the city of Atlanta. In a ruling that was announced last Wednesday, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Georgia found the city's policies restricting non-work speech are too broad and allow city officials to discriminate against views with which they disagree. Joining us now is former fire chief from Atlanta, Chief Kelvin Cochran, and his attorney, Kevin Terrio, who serves as a senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on.
Well, Kevin, let me start with you. Just lay out the facts of the case and what the court decided last week.
The court found for Chief Cochran, and it's a substantial ruling that really vindicates Chief Cochran and his stance all along, which was that, look, I wrote this book for Christian men and to help them to be better husbands and fathers. I felt like I got the permission that I needed to get, but nevertheless, when the city officials and the mayor found out about it, they said, "Whoa, this says some things that we're uncomfortable with," and they suspended him without pay for 30 days, and then they eventually terminated him. And they said the reason why they did that was because he failed to get permission. And what the court said was that, look, those rules that you have in place that require employees to get permission before they go out and write a book like Chief Cochran did that was just completely unrelated work, those rules are unconstitutional. And so, therefore, because you relied upon them to terminate Chief Cochran, that termination was unconstitutional. And that it gave, in fact, those rules allowed the city officials to basically approve of books like Chief Cochran's if they liked them, or disapprove of them if they didn't, and not allow the employees to write them. So it's a pretty significant win for free speech. Now, the judge ruled against us on several of our other claims, but that's to be expected in most lawsuits like this. Certainly, we would have appreciated a broader ruling and would have liked to win on all our claims. But the bottom line is the court found that the chief was discriminated against, his rights were violated, and therefore he should be compensated for this unlawful termination.
Well, Chief Kelvin Cochran, you've been on the program before, back when shortly after this happened. This has to be very encouraging to you. You had your day in court, and you have prevailed. You were right. You had a freedom of speech. It was taken away from you, and the court said it was done wrongfully.
Yes, Tony, I'm so grateful to God that after 3 years of enduring unjust consequences of losing my career in the fire service as fire chief of the city of Atlanta, for the very fact of living out my faith outside of work, that the federal district judge affirmed what we believed all along, that the First Amendment of the United States Constitution protects me and other Americans in those kinds of situations. And, you know, as Kevin said, determined that it's absolutely unconstitutional for the government to have a policy that censors speech in advance and to terminate an employee on that basis.
Well, I know that after, what, 3 decades in the fire service, originally in Shreveport, Louisiana, then in Atlanta, and then actually working in the administration of Barack Obama before going back to Atlanta, this has been your life. You've had a tremendous career, well respected in the fire service. And I think the irony here is that, you know, you have someone who simply because they, as you were doing, you wrote this book for a men's Bible study on how to be God-honoring men. And it was only a portion, if I recall correctly, it was about 2 pages that dealt with homosexuality. But that's what they zeroed in on and tried to say that you were using that or that was evidence of discrimination. This, I hope, sends a strong message to other men, women in the public square that you don't have to check your beliefs at the door of public service.
I believe, and I'm prayerful that it will send that message, you know, because of what happened to me and I call it a fairy tale career. I was able, by the grace of God, to accomplish things that were just unprecedented in my fire service career. And a lot of, you know, public safety officials, fire and law enforcement and otherwise know my track record. And to know that I could be terminated under such circumstances really generated a fear in public safety mm-hmm. officials that should their beliefs be discovered if they were, in this particular instance, opposed to the government's views on marriage and sexuality, that the very same thing can happen to them. So
yeah.
The judge's ruling should really cause a sense of relief and freedom that we can live out our faith and not have the fear of adverse consequences if we are discovered to have expressed those beliefs in a context outside of work.
Kevin Terrio, let me ask you about that. How will other Christians in the realm of public service benefit from this case?
Well, I think the primary way that they'll benefit is there's a pretty clear ruling here, at least for instance, other employees in the city of Atlanta, that they don't have to go and get permission from their supervisor before they engage in speech outside of the workplace. And that's significant because lots of times, if you know, the courts have held for years that this, it's called an unlawful prior restraint. And what that does is that chills speech. If you know that you've got to go to a government official and get permission before you can do something that maybe even might be a little controversial, most likely you're probably not even going to ask for permission. So so that's how egregious these rules were, and that's why the court struck them down. Now, without those in place, there are folks like Chief Cochran who are not going to be intimidated, at least, about going out and writing a book that shares their convictions on things that might be considered by others to be controversial.
So will the court, in the court's ruling, I don't know if they address this directly, but while an employer cannot require prior approval for non-related speech, non-work-related speech, can they use that against an employee later on?
Well, you know, you never know exactly how that's going to pan out. The court didn't really get into that in detail. What the court did say, though, was that you have to have rules in place that prohibit the government officials from approving of things they agree with and disapproving of those things that they don't. And that's called viewpoint discrimination.
Right.
And they can't do that.
So, Chief Cochran, your hopes in terms of this case, is not complete yet. There's still some aspects that are yet to be decided. But what impact do you hope this will have for others in that public, in the realm of public service?
Well, again, I think first and foremost that other government employees that have beliefs and views that do not align with a city government's administrative values and views can express those values and views outside of the scope of work without any adverse consequences. In my particular case, I'm one of those Americans who was raised on faith and patriotism, and I've been a Christian, you know, since I was 5 years old. I've come from a Christian family. Living in poverty in Shreveport, Louisiana, my mama told me that all my dreams would come true for having faith in God and believing in our Constitution. And that's why I've had such a wonderful life. But, you know, what happened to me actually caused other government employees who shared those same beliefs to really keep them to themselves and to be afraid to share those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is my hope that this decision will once again cause that fear to go away. And not that they'll deliberately go out and try to pick a fight.
Right.
But they just simply won't have to be afraid to share their beliefs for fear of consequences.
Well, and I think that's an important point because it's certainly you model that in terms of just living out your faith, not looking for a conflict. And I want to commend you, Chief, for standing firm for your faith. I mean, you could have walked away from this and avoided undue publicity, which has been negative in many cases. But you stood up for a principle of what was right and what was true. And as Americans, we have the right. We have the freedom of religion. And that means the expressing of our religion, even in the workplace. So I want to thank you for your courage and your boldness for standing up and being an example for so many others.
Well, thank you, Tony.
And Kevin, thank you as well for being with us today and for all the great work that Alliance Defending Freedom does. We are grateful for you and for the partnership that we have with you.
Absolutely. It's a privilege being on, Tony, and really appreciate your work there.
All right, folks, Chief Cochran and Kevin Terrio with Alliance Defending Freedom. To find out more about this case, and it's not over, there's still more to come, so you'll want to continue to track that. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. It is so critical to have men and women of, number one, of character and of commitment and of courage to stand up and like the disciples. We will not be silent. We have to speak to what we have seen and heard. All right, don't go away. We're going to come back with more on this case and others with our own Travis Weber next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Tony Perkins here with Washington Watch. You know, in all of my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that has encouraged me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support enabled FRC this year to play a major role in the Trump administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a couple. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally and hopefully defund Planned Parenthood. For a limited time, you can participate in our matching grant challenge. If you make a gift right now, it will be doubled. Please stand with FRC at this moment. You can make your gift now by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008.
They were both groundbreaking world leaders. They were both shot and nearly killed just 6 weeks apart in 1981. Who were these monumental figures who had so much in common? At the Vatican, in June 1982, Pope John Paul II and President Ronald Reagan confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose, to confront and defeat an atheistic and genuinely evil Soviet empire. Paul Kenger's new book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century, explores the two great men's remarkable partnership and how it changed history and the world. Listen to Dr. Kenger as he shares insights based on two decades of declassified documents and interviews that detail the extraordinary story of an extraordinary partnership. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this fascinating talk. Again, that is frc.org/speakers. We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Friday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. As I mentioned, last chance to have your contribution, your donation to FRC to support Washington Watch. Last chance to get it doubled. We have a generous donor that is doubling everything that's given. So whatever you give today will be doubled. So help us. We're a little short of where we need to be. A lot going on in Washington, D.C., across the country. We're involved in continuing to try to seize this moment and the opportunity we have. And we don't want to shrink back. And now is not the time to shrink back. It is to move forward. And we hope to expand Washington Watch in 2018. But we have to have more partners like you. This program completely supported by friends and supporters of FRC. No government money, no advertising dollars, all given by folks like you that care deeply about this country and stand up for the faith. So give us a call. We've got folks standing by to take your phone calls even now. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, or you can give online, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we've been talking about Chief Kelvin Cochran in his case going back to January 2015, where a book that he wrote as a private citizen for a Bible study at his church, the mayor, Kasem Reed, in Atlanta, fired him because it came to the attention of a city council member who sympathetic to the whole, had the LGBT XYZ community. And so he was ultimately fired. Now, last week on Wednesday, as we said earlier, a court ruled in his favor saying that this restriction on free speech was unconstitutional. So we're going to talk about this case and where this might lead and what other cases we see and what other challenges we see to our First Amendment freedom. And joining me to talk about this is FRC's own Travis Weber. He is the director of our Center for Religious Liberty. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, this was a significant victory for Chief Cochran, was it not?
Absolutely. The court ruled on two of his claims, or two bases on one claim, regarding the city's policy that required people like him to get permission for what they would say or write in books, as that falls under outside employment. Now, the court ruled on those claims in favor of Chief Cochran, saying that the city's policy gives too much discretion to officials and is overbroad in how it regulates this outside conduct. So it can't regulate what Chief Cochran did and not regulate other types of outside work that might be permissible. So at least on those basis, the court has issued a ruling for Chief Cochran. This is a victory because you have a court here saying that what the city did to him in terms of requiring its policy to be followed by his actions here violates his First Amendment free speech rights.
So, for instance, you know, someone's going to write a book on gardening, or, you know, he was writing a book on human sexuality. The government, the city in this case, has no right to determine that one can be written and the other cannot.
That's true. You know, now the city can it can put forth bases on which to limit what people do on the outside world. I mean, it has an interest in maintaining order and preventing an absolute disruption of the workforce. And this is related to the other issue regarding public employee speech and how it may be restricted. But you're correct. I mean, it can't arbitrarily approach the topic or give people discretion to limit certain types of speech. And this is important here because what we know now, and what we've seen over the last few years, and going back even further, is that the one area that many seem to want to limit is speech in that area of sexuality. And so the point is that everyone should be free under fair rules designed to protect people regardless of the topic they want to address when it comes to this type of situation.
So, Travis, if the city had a, you know, just across-the-board policy, no employee can write a book, would that have been different in this case?
Well, you know, that it would have been a little different than the policy here, but it still probably would have been struck down because that policy would have wrapped within its net topics that would be protected under free speech law, topics that would be unrelated at all to the work that someone had to do in a position like Chief Cochran's. And so there, you know, a court probably would have looked at that still and said, the First Amendment protections here must be honored, and you can't just, you know, broad brush the First Amendment like that. You know, and I think this kind of relates to the issue underlying the other claims the court rejected that Chief Cochran put forward. And, you know, it's important to think about those, too, in the context of this larger issue.
So what is left for the court to do in this case?
So this latest ruling was on the question of summary judgment. That's when the parties will ask the court to issue a ruling on the legal claims given the facts that are not in dispute at this moment. But this doesn't finish the case because the court did not definitively rule on all claims of all parties. So you have some claims that are going forward to trial, some factual disagreement to this point. And, you know, that has to be resolved before Chief Cochran can receive any legal remedy. You know, we have to wait to see if he gets any remedy. But at least on two claims at this point, you have a court granting him relief. So this is a victory. I'm disappointed the court did not analyze the other claims similarly. But nevertheless, he did win on two of these claims.
All right. We're up against the break. So hold on because I want to finish this conversation on the other side of the break. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. My guest talking about the case with Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran. We're going to continue this conversation when we return here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back right after this. Tony Perkins here with Washington Watch. You know, in all of my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that has encouraged me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support enabled FRC this year to play a major role in the Trump administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a couple. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally and hopefully defund Planned Parenthood. For a limited time, you can participate in our matching grant challenge. If you make a gift right now, it will be doubled. Please stand with FRC at this moment. You can make your gift now by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008.
In 2012, a shooting attack took place at Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The gunman confessed to the FBI that he used Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map to choose FRC as a target for violence. The Southern Poverty Law Center, known as SPLC, likes to boast about its mission to destroy the groups it labels as hate groups, groups that include mainstream conservative and Judeo-Christian organizations. SPLC was founded in the 70s to fight groups like the KKK. Not anymore. These days, SPLC has become a tool for the left to label anyone who doesn't agree with them as a hate group. The SPLC uses smear tactics, intimidation, and a knack for fundraising to silence its political opponents. The group has become so successful that they've stashed $69 million in offshore accounts. Be informed on the true nature of SPLC and how they work to silence groups like Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, American Family Association, and many others. Visit frc.org/SPLC.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us for the last program of the year. Wrapping up 2017, looking forward to 2018. It's actually been a great year. Not without its challenges, but it's been a good year. And next year is going to have its challenges, but its opportunities as well. And we're so glad that you are a part of seizing these opportunities. And if you're listening to Washington Watch and you're an engaged listener, you will be prepared to seize the opportunities. Well, my guest in this segment, Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. We're discussing the case of former Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran, decided, at least a portion of it, decided last week in federal court. So, Travis, there still has to be decided by the court if the chief will receive any type of restitution for what he was put through unfairly by the city of Atlanta.
Yes. He's asked for his job back, for monetary damages, for other types of relief, you know, for a declaration from the court that what the city did was unconstitutional here. And so the idea being this, you know, must not happen to anyone else. So a number of forms of relief, you know, which is common in these types of cases, it's always a possibility the case could settle. But absent that, at some point when it wraps up, and that could be after appeals even, we'll have to wait and see. At some point when it wraps up, he will be granted relief on claims that he's won two of them, according to this court. Now we have to see if those are appealed or not, and obviously what happens with the remainder of the case at the district court level. But things look promising for him to obtain relief, and we'll have to see precisely what form that is.
I asked Kevin Terrio, his attorney with ADF, his question earlier, but I want to get your thoughts on it as well in terms of the impact this will have on other government employers, seeing that there have been, especially in the bigger cities where, you know, this more quote-unquote progressive, you know, LGBTQ agenda has taken root, that there is this conflict between religious expression, freedom, and this agenda. I mean, Are government officials in some of these places going to be put on notice by this case?
Yes, to a degree, because the court basically told them you have to very carefully draw up your policies regarding outside employment. They have to be narrowly drawn up and not give officials too much discretion or be too overbroad. So they'll have to make sure those are properly drafted, and if they're not, they're going to be struck down, at least according to the reasoning of this court. However, you know, the reason I'm hesitant and the reason I think we still need to pay attention to these types of cases is if you look at the way the court rejected Chief Cochran's other claims regarding his free speech and freedom of association rights, the court basically said when it comes to public employees, public employers can more easily regulate speech. Now, this is understandable, and there's a separate body of law dealing with this for a good reason, right? Because you can't have a workplace entirely disrupted from someone undermining the mission. So there's an understandable reason that you can't just go say whatever you want to the press when you're at certain jobs. But when it comes to sexuality issues, same-sex marriage, and these related issues, we know that the public institutions, our judiciary, et cetera, are under pressure to rule a certain way. And we always must be focused on how can free speech be protected in these cases and fall on the side of free speech. And that's where it's disappointing to see the court here basically say, well, look, what Chief Cochran did could create a hostile work environment, make people feel unwelcome, create inefficiency in the department. Those were the basis on which the court said what the city did here was fine. I think that's very flimsy. First of all, for anyone who knows Chief Cochran personally, but secondly, if you really understand what happened here, he's a fine, upstanding citizen just trying to live out his faith. He's not trying to go around and create a disruptive environment. If anything, his entire history has shown that he's trying to do the opposite. So I think this kind of the way the court ruled here, it shows an open door for other courts that want to follow, and that's not good. We need to really be careful and watch and make sure free speech is protected in these types of cases.
So we can anticipate when you see this growing conflict between religious freedom, which is a clearly enumerated freedom in the Constitution, our first freedom, and these court-created rights such as same-sex marriage and same-sex relationships, this conflict is going to be ongoing.
Absolutely. You know, we've seen evidence of this, and we're going to continue to see more cases develop, I think. You know, we've seen this case, I would classify it, you know, as the public employment context, public employees that Chief Cochran was. But we see these in the cases of small business owners against state authority trying to compel them to violate their faith. And that most recently come to bear in the case of Jack Phillips. Some of those deal with marriage, the wedding industry, but others just in other contexts. Mm-hmm. You've got public.
Hey Travis, Travis, we're up against another break. So can you hold on into the next segment? Help to hate to tie you up for
absolutely
so long, but can you hold on?
That's,
yeah, okay. All right, folks. Travis is going to hold on. I hope you'll hold on because I want to ask him an important question. Is can these two be reconciled? Can you have both? We're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. So don't go away. You're listening to Washington Watch. Tony Perkins here with Washington Watch. You know, in all of my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that has encouraged me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support enabled FRC this year to play a major role in the Trump administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a couple. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally and hopefully defund Planned Parenthood. For a limited time, you can participate in our matching grant challenge. If you make a gift right now, it will be doubled. Please stand with FRC at this moment. You can make your gift now by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008.
They were both groundbreaking world leaders. They were both shot and nearly killed just 6 weeks apart in 1981. Who were these monumental figures who had so much in common? At the Vatican, in June 1982, Pope John Paul II and President Ronald Reagan confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose: to confront and defeat an atheistic and genuinely evil Soviet empire. Paul Kenger's new book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century, explores the two great men's remarkable partnership and how it changed history and the world. Listen to Dr. Kenger as he shares insights based on two decades of declassified documents and interviews that detail the extraordinary story of an extraordinary partnership. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this fascinating talk. Again, that is frc.org/speakers. We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website is tonyperkins.com. And if you're on Twitter, it is at tperkins. And if you would like to be a partner with FRC and Washington Watch, we got folks standing by to take your phone call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. Travis Weber, my guest, the director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. We've been discussing the case with former Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran. All right, Travis, let's go back. We were talking about these the future of this conflict and some of the other cases that are within both state and federal agencies. How do we see this playing out in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see a myriad of these claims develop in different contexts, and they all deal with a religious freedom claim versus a non-discrimination claim of some sort. I was mentioning the wedding vendor context. You've got small businesses in other areas, government grantees, contractors, those currently given tax-exempt status by the government, religious nonprofits, and public elected officials, too, like Kim Davis in Kentucky. All of these feature a conflict of those claims. And I think, we have to recognize that people like Jack Phillips are being very reasonable when they say, look, I just want to honor my faith. I'm just trying to live in peace. Those opposing people like Jack Phillips are not willing to say, well, if someone needs a same-sex wedding cake, there are many happy to provide it. They are not willing to let Jack Phillips live in peace. They want to force him to be the one providing it. He can't do that and honor his conscience. So that scenario sets up a number of conflicts to continue, and people who want to have their freedoms protected and have their rights honored need to be prepared to fight for them.
Well, in terms of the non-discrimination, not discriminating against someone, let's go back to Kelvin Cochran's case. There was no evidence, nor did anyone allege, that he had actually engaged in behavior that was discriminatory. What he did is he held a view of human sexuality that is, number one, historical, biblical, and for many years was the norm in our society. How can just holding a viewpoint be determined to be discriminatory?
I mean, it's a good question, right? I mean, and this is why his case is so dangerous. You're correct that there's There's no, they didn't find any evidence he discriminated, and they actually don't cite a SOGI policy as the basis for firing him. What they do is cite the city's employment policy for outside employment. And to be fair to this case features not necessarily on the surface a conflict between SOGI laws and religious freedom, but rather religious freedom and a policy which dealt with a factual scenario about SOGI law. So I classify it in the same way. I really don't think this case would have turned out this way if it did not deal with this topic. I mean, if you look at what happened, what got this attention is the sexuality topic. So to answer your question, you know, really, you know, what we have here, the city saying we have a basis that, you know, for outside employment he must follow. But really, they shift positions several times. Really, what they're opposed to is his viewpoint, and they just massage their way out of that because they know they can't justify on the surface viewpoint discrimination.
So when a court takes up this topic and you have a clearly enunciated freedom, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, it's in the First Amendment, how is it that it appears that courts are coming out on the side of this sexual libertinism, this court-created same-sex marriage? I mean, how is it that that can triumph over something that's so clear as the freedom of religion?
Yeah, I mean, this is a good question, too. I think this really goes back to judicial philosophy, worldview, and how one views the role of a judge and the legal system in a society. If one takes the view that law is a tool to affect the social outcome that one wants, the text doesn't matter as much, you can really arrive at a view where, or arrive at a conclusion where you say, well, you know, what we need to do now is further LGBT rights, so we're going to, you know, arrive at different legal outcomes to do that. However, if you look at the First Amendment, recognize there's text there that must be followed, recognize that, as you said, LGBT rights, in constitutionally speaking at least, are not in the text. And as the courts analyze these claims, should honor and defer to the stated textual requirements in the First Amendment. If you look at that, you're going to come out on the side of the First Amendment. So I think these splits really get at the heart of worldview, judicial philosophy, and this is why nominations are so important, because they affect how a judge looks at these things. I think that's the reason that we're seeing some of these outcomes when the text for the LGBT rights and same-sex marriage is not in the Constitution.
So when we talk about that, the judicial nominees and their philosophy, when you talk about you talk about constitutionalists and textualists, those who look at the Constitution as it is written, that has significant bearing on this debate right here before us.
Absolutely. And even if you can't find a clear ruling on a certain issue, if you know someone is a committed textualist and originalist and is going to be faithful to that with integrity, you know generally how they're going to come out on many of these issues, because you can trust that their philosophy will lead them to the right end point. Now, we don't know any of this. Sometimes it's a risk when someone doesn't have a clear record. And even then, judges sometimes depart from how they ruled in the past. But the originalist philosophy, which is related to also the constitutional order we have and a deference to a recognition that the judiciary should be limited and decide cases and not enact social policy, when one has that philosophy, I think it protects freedom for all, really. And it protects freedom certainly for more people than when people take over the judiciary and use it to enact policy.
Hmm. Well, I think it obviously is a debate that we're going to continue to have in our country and in our culture. Before I let you go, I do want to ask you, there are some other cases. You mentioned the other case that was before the Supreme Court, Jack Phillips with the Masterpiece Cakes. But we're seeing some other cases still in the military that are coming forward as a result of this conflict between, you know, this court-created same-sex marriage and a biblical view of morality.
Right. There's actually one that's a perfect example of this, the case of Colonel Bohannon, an Air Force colonel who was disciplined by an administrative investigator for declining to sign a same-sex spouse appreciation certificate. So off the bat, the fact that same-sex marriage is constitutionalized, permitted at the federal level here, creates this scenario or allows this scenario. Now, Colonel Bohannon says, look, I can't in good conscience sign this, but here someone else will sign it. So at that point, you would think all is peacefully worked out in, you know, a peaceful conclusion to one of these conflicts, scenarios of conflict that we've talked about. However, the person seeking the certificate was not happy, filed a complaint against Colonel Bohannon because he didn't personally sign it. This results in an investigation. An investigator says, you've discriminated, and rejects the religious accommodation request. Now Colonel Bohannon is facing administrative punishment, which will derail his career unless this is corrected by the Air Force. You know, and first off, the administrative investigation just botched this, doesn't get the law right. And this is really reason, you know, for why we need to, people need to understand how religious freedom law works, understand the laws on the books. But this needs to be corrected by the Air Force. And it's a perfect scenario, example of these types of scenarios with religious freedom conflicting with sexuality being imposed by the government, in this case, an Air Force EO investigator on this person, on this honorable, you know, colonel who's served decades in the Air Force. And so a great example of something that we hope will be fixed as we enter this new year.
Well, and it requires vigilance. We have to continually be informed and be involved and shine a light on cases like this. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Travis Weber, he is the director for the Center of Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council, puts out a lot of great stuff. If you'd like to find out more and track this, he's got a number of reports that he has done on these issues. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. I just want to, before we wrap up here in this last program of the year, I do want to encourage you. I hope that when you hear from people like Chief Cochran and others who, you know, have taken a stand, and we've had a number of different ones from the military that have been on this program over the course of the years, who, same scenario, they just were doing what they were supposed to do. They weren't looking for a fight, and I think that's extremely important. It's a point that Chief Cochran made that, look, I don't think we should go out and pick a fight. As I often say, I don't think we should have a Jesus chip on our shoulder waiting for someone to knock it off so that we can get into some kind of holy scuffle. I think that we need to live out our faith, and if confronted, we need to live out our faith. I mean, it goes to Acts chapter 4. I mean, the disciples give us a clear, clear pattern for dealing with this. You remember Peter and John, they were preaching the gospel not long after Jesus had been crucified. And they went back to the same crowd that actually was responsible for crucifying Christ. I know, theologically, we all did that. It was our sins that took him to the cross. He voluntarily gave himself as a sacrifice for us. But those that were physically responsible for crucifying him, and you know, Peter points the finger at him and said, you're responsible. Well, they didn't like it. Now, these guys were bold. This was Peter, who actually denied Christ three times, but now he had the Holy Spirit. He was bold. He put it on the line, and they arrested him. And I mean, you probably know the whole story, but they held him in prison. Then they were afraid of the crowds because they had been a part of a miracle. And so they just called him in. They said, all right. They commanded them not to speak or teach in the name of Jesus. Isn't that interesting? Just, you know, don't bring up Jesus. Don't bring up all this Bible stuff. Just, you know. You can have your church meetings, you can have those things, but don't do this in public and don't talk about Jesus. Well, they said, this was their response. Whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. I hope, and my prayer for you, is that in this coming year, 2018, that you'll do just like these disciples did. They were propelled and compelled out of a deep love for God and for their fellow man to speak truth. even in the face of great hostility and personal sacrifice. And when they were told to be quiet and drop the talk about Jesus, I said, we can't. We cannot help but speak about the things that we have seen and heard. If you are a follower of Jesus Christ, if you have been saved, redeemed, and you've been reconciled to your Creator, then you have a story to tell. And you cannot help but tell the things that God has done in your life. And as an American, you have a right to speak about that. That's our first freedom. It's not the ability to choose what church you're going to go into on a particular Sunday morning. It is the ability to live out your faith each and every day. And you have that right as an American, but as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus Christ, you have a responsibility to do that. What's interesting, they go on in this passage in Acts where they were warned not to speak about these things. And so they had a prayer meeting. What did they pray for? Did they pray for a way out? I mean, this is a pretty hostile environment. Did they pray for, you know, God to strike down their opponents? No. They got together and they prayed for boldness. They prayed for boldness to speak the truth of God. And folks, that's what we need to be doing. In this coming year, is that we need, compelled by love, to speak the truth of God to a world that desperately needs to hear that truth. And not be intimidated. Be like Chief Cochran. Stand up, proclaim truth, and allow God to be your defender, as he was for Kelvin. I mean, it's not over yet, but I believe that Kelvin's going to be more than restored, because that's God, and God is faithful. So folks, as we approach this new year, make that resolution to be bold and courageous in your faith, speaking truth to a culture that is in desperate need of that truth, and do not shrink back. I know you can say, well, but you know, those values and those are old-fashioned. No, they're not. They are time-tested. They are built on transcendent truths. And the morality that God has called us to is fixed. It's not changing. Doesn't change with each generation. Doesn't change, you know, from day to day, year to year. It's fixed. And, folks, we are we're safe, and we're in his refuge and his protection when we live by his truths and we honor him. All right, out of time for this program and this year. Thanks so much for joining us and being a part of Washington Watch. And let me once again, as we wrap up 2017, encourage you, as Paul does in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.